WE today is my old friend, Julia Rabina from Florida. Julia, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I apologize for that, but we've got a great show coming up. There's a lot of PR Fairfax Radio. You're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining me on the Commons is information that we're going to be sharing with you, so get comfortable out there. And let me tell you, my guest today is also known as the Energizer Bunny because he has more energy than any three people I know combined. Julio, I don't know what your mother feeds you for breakfast, but whatever it is, I want some.
Well, I think it's what the citizens of Florida give me to do, their task, and I think that's what gives me all the energy. But I guess a little bit of home cooking helps a lot, too.
Yeah? Well, whatever it is, I'm coming down to have some with you, but no. I'm always amazed at how much you get done and how energetic you are and how you're constantly on the go. And you're always coming up with good ideas. But you still think of yourself as a public servant. You've said that a number of times.
That's the reality, Chu. I've always said that there's a big difference between a public servant and a politician. Boy, we have in our legislative process here in Florida, we've got politicians a dime a dozen. What do I mean by that? Is somebody that really, you know, talks up a great game and then doesn't really do anything to follow through. But in this situation, what you have with myself is somebody who's grassroots. You know, I can probably look at myself and say, how did I end up here? This is not a career that I wanted to take on when it came to, you know, public office. It's just, this is what happens when you have a grassroots person that gets frustrated and understands you can't do very much. Then you decide to run for office, and it's gone from local government to now a legislator. So that's the difference that makes you a public servant in comparison to a politician, that these are people that probably want to pursue these careers. And they do a lot of talking, but they don't do any problem solving.
And the frustrating part, I would imagine, is that you have all of these wonderful ideas and you've got all of these great bills, but how do you get them approved through the legislative process?
That's a great question, and let me just state for the record that these great ideas, I got to tell you, 99.9% of them really don't come from me directly. It comes from listening, which is what we're supposed to do as public servants. We're supposed to listen to the people that have the problems, because at the same time, those same people with the problems a lot of times offer solutions, and which brings to mind somebody that I always mention, Jan Bergman and his group CCFJ, which I got to tell you, I give them a lot of credit because they also listen. They listen to, thanks to the wonderful world of the Internet and emails, they listen to people all around the state and now all around the country taking problems. And a lot of times people will also submit what we call common sense approach to solutions. And that's what I do. I got to tell you again, I'm in a battle where I don't live in a condominium. I own some condominium units in Tallahassee, Florida. And I mean, whether I like it or not, I'm now working with the people there. It's in the project where there's a developer that soon will turn it over to a board. So it'll be interesting, you know, when I'm actually in the midst of it. But I thank the people of Florida, and especially Jan Bergman, CCFJ, and others like him that brought it to my attention, all the problems. And since there's really no interest for me personally, although it's a huge problem in this state of Florida, I just enjoy listening to the different ideas that are proposed, and then I get to run with them. But from an idea proposed to getting it done, as you know, Shu, it's a war. It's a very big battle because you take on a lot of special interests. And it seems like sometimes we'll take one step forward, and at other times we take two steps back. And that's the only part that at times is frustrating. But as you said, I've got a lot of energy. And I will outdo them. I will beat them down slowly but surely to do the right thing for unit owners.
I did not realize that you had bought some condo units. Knowing everything you know about the problems here, Julio, you're still buying in them.
I am buying into the nightmare because I think that I'm going to improve the nightmare. And as this is a test of my own patience and to see. Actually, it's a great thing because now I get to test and see a lot of the laws that I've changed and some of the other ones that I'm still trying to change. And now I'll know how it applies. Besides that, I mean, they were pretty good investments in northern Florida. but now I'll be able to really experience it firsthand. Whereas before, I said thanks to groups like CCFJ and Jan and just the thousands of people that call this office every month with both condo and homeowner association problems. And now I'll get to experience it firsthand, and it'll help me learn what are some of the small technical things that need to be addressed, because, you know, I'll have to deal with them personally now, and it'll help me in my future in legislating these changes.
It's interesting that you say the thousands of people who contacted you, because when I first got on the Internet, I've been involved with associations for almost 20 years now, but when I first got on the Internet about 10 years ago, people were afraid of contacting their legislators. They were very intimidated. They were embarrassed by the problems they were having. And, you know, they'd call me or they'd talk to me and I'd say, well, contact your legislators. I mean, there's not a whole lot I can do for you, but let the lawmakers know how these laws are affecting you. And they wouldn't do it. They were too scared of picking up the phone. So I'm glad to see that that has changed.
It's changed. And I got to tell you, I can understand why a lot of people didn't want to call anybody, because there's a lot of apathy. The government's really failed them in trying to change these laws to protect them. But more importantly, I don't know how it is in other states, but here in Florida, we are known for intimidation. God forbid you start making noise against a board. They'll make your life miserable to the point of what they try to do with slap suits, you know, trying to keep mm-hmm. you quiet, intimidating you with attorneys. And then the latest thing is vandalism. We got people here that complain that they're tires got punctured and they scratched the paint of their car, or they put, you know, notes underneath the door trying to humiliate them. And it's terrible. The intimidation is terrible. But I think the wave is now changing. There are more grassroots public servants like myself getting elected with the help of groups like CCFJ and so forth that help point out who are the good ones, who the ones are going to really stand up and try to fight for people's rights. Because at the end of the day, all we're trying to do is get you out of the nightmare called association living and let you have a little peace of mind and enjoy your dream, your home.
About 18 years ago, someplace in there, I got involved with trying to get a grassroots organization up and running here called Consumers, I can't remember what, no, Council for Homeowner Rights, CHR, that's right. And it was interesting because a lot of the people that came to us, the people who tried to do anything in their associations, and you talk about the intimidation, they'd go in, they couldn't get, you know, their cars had been keyed, they couldn't get into their cars, they couldn't unlock their cars.
So you have the same problem.
And they couldn't get into their units because somebody put toothpicks in the locks and broken the toothpicks off. I mean, they still do that. They've been doing that for years. But with technology and modern technology and the Internet and all of the things, you know, the prices are coming down. Homeowners are actually putting up cameras, and they're capturing board members throwing drinks in their, you know, in their cars, bringing their dogs to use their front lawns for the bathroom and things like that. So they're actually catching that on camera, on video, which is interesting.
We've had some people here in Florida that have been caught. We actually had an individual that threw fluids through a window and did some other things.
Right.
And had the person had a camera, and
right.
the individual was arrested. But when you talk about these issues, there's two segments that we need to look at. You know, of course, the lawmakers, people like us, have to create better laws to protect the owners. But more importantly, there's a thing that lacks all the time, and it's called enforcement. And enforcement is something that is very weak. Most departments that regulate homeowner associations, for instance, in Florida, we regulate condos, but really not the HOAs. And we'll talk a little bit about that later, but we really don't have a leg of enforcement if a crime has been committed. Everything you just spoke about, whether they're keying a car, whether they're sticking toothpicks in the door lock, throwing fluid, you understand that that's not a type of complaint that you file. That's criminal activity. And law enforcement has never really gotten into that kind of stuff. Well, here in Florida, we've started a program that I've worked on for 2 years. It's been nothing but sweat and tears and fighting to get all the different components of this pilot program, which we're trying out in my county, to finally train local police officers, detectives, on finding these types of vandalism and crime, and also looking into what we call the cooking of the books, the stuff that's going on here when people are fraudulently, you know, taking money from the association, from their actual budget. They're paying their credit cards, money being given to contractors under the table, deals cut with property management companies, you name it. In South Florida, we've invented it. And we've worked on this program. We're still working on it. We're perfecting the checklist that will be given everybody once the law enforcement officers come out, so that these people will be able to do their due diligence. And as you said, with technology nowadays and people being able to put cameras up in the least expected places, we're going to start having some arrests. And I actually have some good news. We here in Broward County, we're going to have an arrest coming down the pike next week, where several board members have already been somewhat found. Well, they're actually being charged with a crime of stealing money from an association. And we'll be having a press conference next week to announce that. But this kind of stuff really goes on. And unfortunately, people, if many years ago the average citizen would have called their legislators, I'm sure they would have found a lot of Mr. Robinas and Energizer buddies that would have liked to have taken this stuff on, Shu, because it's just a crime, it's terrible, and it's about people's homes.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, Julio, the special interests, they, oh, you know, they're just isolated incidents, and you don't need this. I have to tell you right now, I'm going up to New Jersey tomorrow because the Common Interest Homeowner Coalition, in conjunction with Rutgers University and Seton Hall University and AARP and a number of and the ACLU and a number of other organizations, are putting on a conference. And I'm going up to the conference, and I understand that the industry, first of all, is whining because they said, oh, you set this up without, you know, without inviting us, without consulting us. Yeah, like, right, how many times do they consult the homeowners? But the other thing they've done is, Julio, they've gone and scared the seniors. So I understand they're going to be busing in some seniors who are afraid of legislation because...
That is correct.
They have told them that this is going to, you know, you don't want any kind of legislation because the legislation is going to cost you money.
Correct.
And so they've been playing mind games with these seniors, and these seniors are coming, yet they're being robbed blind.
It's happening all over, Shu. It's happening here in Florida all the time.
I know it is. So you've had experience with it.
I've had it firsthand where I'm trying to pass legislation to protect the most vulnerable, and at times they are the retirees, the seniors that have, you know, have decided that they want to live in a condominium. They gave up those homes, and they moved into what they thought was their dream, but they're now realizing what the problems are. And you understand, they get intimidated very easily. And here we are passing legislation to help them out, but a lot of the law firms that represent them, or even the actual board members, tell them that what we're trying to do is just the opposite. And normally what it is, the fear factor they put in them, is that that's bad legislation. It's going to cost you money. It's going to create all kinds of problems. And unfortunately, a lot of the seniors don't read what it is that we're actually trying to do, and they are a lot of times used to send emails to the elected officials, to contact them personally. And, you know, it makes a very big impact when you're trying to pass legislation if all of a sudden a large number of seniors that are your direct voters in any legislator's district start calling them and saying, oh, there's a piece of legislation out there that's going to hurt us, it's going to cost us more money, please vote against it. And now something that could have been very good for them is basically now shut down because of those deceitful ways of being from certain special interest groups. And we have that all the time. We have law firms here in this particular state and in my county that constantly, not only do they do that, but they'll spend the money and put out a newsletter and let them know that, look, these are bad laws, these are going to hurt you. It's a shame that government doesn't have the money to send somebody there personally to speak to each and every one of those people and tell them to please stop reading that. That's nothing but nonsense. This is to help you out. And that's one of the reasons why good legislation dies all the time. And I'll give you one other example. There's one large law firm here in the state of Florida that has always battled me on any type of changes of law. Every time we try to do something, it's bad. It's terrible. It's against you. It's going to cost you money. Same scare tactics that you're talking about. And it's funny. Recently, they were just quoted in a big publication here in South Florida one of the biggest problems is the misappropriation of funds. A large concern is kickback from vendors. Those are the exact quotes from one of the senior partners in this firm. And when they've seen me up there trying to do something about it, they try to kill that legislation. This is the stuff that's mind-boggling, but that's called the world of special interest versus the consumer and the right to protect these consumers.
Jan Bergman, that we've talked about, and he's a great friend of mine as well, and one of the people that I work very closely with on a national level. Jan was on last week, and we were talking about, and this is a group that you have of mostly seniors, again, I believe, in Florida called.
This is correct. Remember, we're the haven for retirement.
Citizens for Pets and Condos, and they have managed to collect 13,500 signatures because they want to be allowed to have pets. And according to Jan, that bill failed. Now, they've been copying me on a lot of their emails, mm-hmm. and my advice to them was, don't get into, we want this and we want that. Just say outright, no bans on pets, period, end of story. If there's a problem, deal with it later. But they ignored me and they said, no, we're going to limit this and make it a very, focus very narrowly just on emotional needs.
Because I want to tell you that even that brought criticism.
I know.
Even the limited version. So at times, since you're going to have a battle as it is anyway, it might be a good idea to go a step further. But in this situation, even that, which was medically necessary pets, that's what we were trying to pass this year, that at several steps during committees, it was tried by several senators and in some cases some representatives to remove that language because they felt that that was unfair to those who didn't want pets. And remind you, this doesn't take away the powers of the association to still set the rules and regulations on how many pets, the size of pets, and everything. All we were trying to do is tell these boards, if it's an emotional or physically handicapped person, that you don't have the right to say no pets at all. Common sense stuff that really just is mind-boggling how, again, the special interest groups continue to manipulate the process because they live on feeding wrong information to people, stirring them up, and then those are the calls that are generated to kill good legislation.
But despite the fact that they have 13,500, I've never seen anything like it.
It's unbelievable. It really is that stuff happens.
And the bill was killed.
Let me tell you the sad part about this legislation. This bill passed the toughest committees, and it was ready for the last stops, to be honest with you. The word is because one senator in the Florida Senate had some issues with a couple of constituents. They held the bill, and the bill never went forward. This bill could have been passed. It would probably have been signed into law within the next couple of weeks. That's the sad part about it. But let's talk about from the beginning of this bill, we were trying to attempt something here in Florida, which was to start also regulating homeowner associations. We were told at times that we would have the green light to do so. And all of a sudden, as soon as the bill started to work through the process, there was people in high positions that said, oh, no, that's going to be too expensive. And other people started calling special interest groups that didn't want it addressed. And all of a sudden we found ourselves having to look at a compromise, removing that language. And that's the sad part about the legislation that we try to pass at times to protect consumers. But all that said and done, remember you said earlier in the beginning of the show, you never give up. Well, I don't. I've now asked our Speaker of the House to allow me to create another, what we call a select committee or a special committee, where we'll appoint probably 7 or 8 representatives, and we will go on a mission of going on a county-per-county basis and listening to people that live in homeowner associations, although we'll continue to listen to ideas on condos also, but to try to see what it is we could do. Because one of the things, the only positive thing that I am seeing is that for the first time, even the interest groups that used to try to kill our legislation behind the scenes, at least they're coming to Tallahassee, to our capital, and meeting with us because they understand we're not backing down. We're going to continue. So they're understanding that we're not going away. We're going to continue. And sometimes, believe it or not, in some cases, they have tried to compromise, but never to the extent of where the consumer needs to be to protect himself.
At this point, I would like to say that On the Commons is always available to you in any way that we can help and to get the word out. I want to also tell you that I did two extensive interviews, one with the Washington Post and one with, I think it was the News Observer, an observer anyway, a newspaper down in North Carolina, I believe it was. And in both cases, I managed to turn the focus of the interview over to some of the problems in associations. And in both cases, I suggested that the reporters contact you and talk about your pilot, find out firsthand about your pilot program, because I think that is very, very important. But I think both publications decided it was too hot to handle, and they just weren't going to publish those articles.
Well, you know,
so they died.
And at times, you, I wonder whether is it really it's too hot for publication, or is it that a lot of the special interest groups maybe buy advertising in those newspapers? See, that's why I can't understand why the media would not want to put out something that, for all of those that are listening to the show today, I highly encourage them that you create a balance, or the checks and balances when it comes to association living, by creating, similar to what we're doing, a program, a pilot program. It's time to start investigating fraud and what I consider to be, this type of criminal activity of damaging people's property, trying to intimidate people, and anything that has to do with causing harm to an individual. And that's what we're doing. It's unbelievable to think that we have never had enforcement for this kind of stuff. It's like saying that, you know, everybody has heard that, you know, with Medicare and Medicaid, especially Medicare, federal government, you know that after many, many years of people complaining that there was so much fraud in Medicare, what did the federal government do? They created a unit, trained a number of law enforcement people to investigate fraud. And every year you hear how many people get arrested for falsifying and creating fraud with Medicaid billing. Well, that's what we're trying to do. Condominiums and homeowner associations are something that are here to stay, and it's going to be the future of Florida and all other states. As the population grows, we're going to build up. We're going to build more condos, and we're going to build these planned gated communities where there's going to be a need for associations.
Heaven help us that we just don't seem to learn our lessons.
Yeah? No, we don't. And that's why legislators every day should be considering a bill to do something to clean this up. It's out of control, and I'm going to keep pushing. And I know I'm going to see the day someday when there's a total revamp of these laws. But I think that the most important thing that I can accomplish, although you see I have a hard time passing legislation at times, we get bits and pieces, but we never get the full scope of what we want. Something that can't be taken away from us, and this is something I'm challenging those people listening out there that may be in office, these fraud programs do not go to a vote. You can do that yourself. And to explain what I've had to do there, it's just been an act of hard work where I've gone to first every local police department in our city. We have probably 25 or 30 different police departments under one county.
We're going to take a break in a few minutes. I really want to get, I really want to focus and spend some time on this.
On that program.
On this program, I want to get the nuts and bolts, the ABCs, beginning to the end.
Beautiful.
So I don't want to cut you off in the middle to go to a break. So can I cut you off before we get
Absolutely.
Started?
Absolutely, and then we'll explain the whole thing.
And then I'm just going to shut up and let you take it from there. Before we go to a break, though, as I mentioned, Jan was on last week, and he said one of the bills that did pass was that you are now allowed to be buried with your pet or have your pet buried with you. And Julio, the first thing that came to my mind was, wait a minute, you're not allowed to have a pet. So how can you have one buried with you? I mean, what is going on in the legislature
down there?
That'll
show you where our priorities are in Florida.
Whose idea was that?
Well, I can tell you, it wasn't mine, but it was a very powerful senator, and he got his way.
Yeah, but did he support your bill?
Absolutely. He did. That senator, believe it or not, was one of the ones that when they were trying to challenge and remove the language, since he's a strong, as you can tell, supporter of animals and just a big proponent of anything that has to do pro-animal, pro-pets, he was the one that helped save it in the Senate. So I'm very thankful. And I guess he got his wish now. His pets are like his kids, and I guess the day he passes away, his pets will be buried with him.
And if the pets are still alive?
Well, I guess they get to live until they pass, and then I don't know how that will work out. That'll be interesting.
Before we go, we're going to go to a break. I just wanted to tell you that I've been hearing from some of your constituents, and they can't say enough nice things about you, Julio.
Well, again, I'll tell you, I appreciate that because they know I'm dedicated and I'm grassroots. I'm not politicking this. I'm trying to do the grassroots public servant legislation. But you, one of the big things that I like about your show is that I know that a lot of people listen to this. And I know wherever state you are, if you're listening to this show, you've got a legislator like me somewhere that's willing to take these causes up because they're long overdue. It's about people's homes, and I'm willing and able always to talk to them and share ideas. They can learn from me, and more importantly, I can learn from them what they may have in place.
Maybe one of these days I'll bring my little recorder down and we'll do a show from down in Florida.
That would be great.
Wouldn't that be fun? All right. Don't go away. We'll be right back with plenty more, and we're going to hear all about the program that Julio started.
Fighting radio pablum in the no-guts Washington radio market. We're WEBR, Fairfax's cable access radio station.
They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. WBR, Fairfax Radio, you're on The Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and on The Commons with us we have my favorite Energizer Bunny of all time, also known as Representative Julio Robina. Julio, thank you so much for joining us today. I know you've been busy.
Very busy.
Very busy, and so I really appreciate the fact that you're coming on and taking the time to talk to us. We were going to dedicate the second half of the show to a pilot program that you came up, you conceived, and you have been pushing for, and you found a creative way to get it started.
Well, the most creative thing about it is that I don't have to worry about passing legislation to get this thing done, and it creates a law enforcement leg that we don't have, otherwise known as real enforcement of any type of what we call white-collar crime, or any type of delinquency, whether, as we said earlier, it's be vandalizing of automobiles or property or anything of that nature, or any stealing of money or kickbacks. But let me start from here. Why did we do this? Is because, as you know, probably in every state, if you suspect that there's been some type of fraud in your association, money's missing, or there's no accountability on how the money's being used. Here in Florida, the way it worked was that when you would call the local law enforcement group or our regulating body in Tallahassee, they basically referred you to local authorities, meaning either the state attorney's office, And nothing was done. And if you ever called your local police department, they would come out and say, well, this is an association environment.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, no, we don't get involved in this. If you have a problem here, you've got to go ahead and file a civil lawsuit against your board.
Right.
So where's the enforcement there? There was no enforcement on criminal activity. Here's what I did. For 2 years, I've been trying to convince all the people that are the pieces of the puzzle that I needed to come together to create the law enforcement leg of it. So if you're listening, you may want to get something, a piece of paper and a pencil, and write this stuff down so you can forward this information to your legislators so that they can do similar types of programs. And why we did a pilot program is because when you start any new type of program like this, you want to start it small, maybe in one community, get the bugs out of it, and then, you know, go ahead and apply it statewide at a larger level. But you got to get the bugs out of it as we're working them out here. Here's what we call it. We call it the condo. This this applies only to condominiums at this time. The Condominium Fraud Pilot Program. Condominium Fraud Pilot Program. Here's what we did. I've reached out, as I said, to every one of those 25 different cities that we have within our county. And I called every chief of police and said, Chief, how would you like to send your police officers to free training? And I'm going to get the state to train them on another type of fraud that's being committed every single day, condo fraud. The chiefs and everyone in there says if the state provides the training, then we have no problem training our officers on any new type of fraud. Then we needed to go the next step. I needed to get the agency, which would actually make this a certified and course that really counted towards training. So we had to go and get a partnership with, in this case, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. They're basically the umbrella that certifies all police officers within the state of Florida, and they're normally the ones in charge of training and anything that impacts local law enforcement all around our state. They became part of the program. I asked them to please join us. You have experience in this, and we'd like to have you be part of this program. The third piece of the puzzle was the state, the regulatory arm. They know a lot of the things that go on. They understand it. They eat and breathe this every day. So they agreed to be a part of the puzzle, along with an office that I established years ago called the Ombudsman's Office. Our Ombudsman's Office becomes a point person, and I'll explain to you how that works. And then the last piece of the puzzle, the last group we needed, of course, was your attorneys, your state attorneys, that if law enforcement did their job and found that there was probable cause, of course you need your state attorneys to file charges against anybody that's been caught either creating some kind of crime, whether it's vandalism, whatever, or whether it was white-collar crime, corruption of the record, stealing money from the association. So what we did after a long and tedious process, we finally got them all to agree to meet and start to training. What we did is we invited, through the chiefs of police, every one of those cities, police officers that they wanted to send to a training, an all-day training that was being taught by the Department of Business and Professional Regulations so they can train these officers on what to look for. We had the Florida Department of Law Enforcement so it could be a course that they got training for. It was a certified and a type of course that they do get credit for attending. We had the state attorney's office, so they'll know what they're going to be looking for and what their responsibility will be. And then last but not least, of course, the ombudsman's office, which will be there as point person. The training took place. The officers were trained. Videos and DVD copies of the training were made during that day, and they created what they call a condo crime screening checklist. Here's what's happened. Then all of a sudden the police officers went back to their communities. Now they've had some preliminary training. We made copies of the videos of the training so that each police department can have a copy of it, and at their leisure they can train all of the police officers either during morning roll call or sometime at their leisure, train the rest of the police officers to understand that now they're going to be investigating condo crimes, that they are no longer, here's key, that they are no longer to show up at an association and say, oh, this is an association, it's a civil matter. Those days are gone. Now they know they're going to treat this like any other crime, and they're not going to refer them to a civil court. Now they know what to look for, now they have the resources, and more importantly, now they have this checklist that they created. So here's how it works in Florida. In those 25 cities, depending on which one of those cities you live in, remember, you pay taxes, you pay the salaries of those police officers. So if you live in one of those cities, or if you live under the county, you would call that city, and they would say non-emergency or an emergency. Of course, it's a non-emergency. An officer would come out, or you can go to the police station and pick up one of these forms. But when the officers come out, they'll give these individuals who are reporting some type of crime, whether it's, you know, they claim it's fraud or stealing of money or vandalism, they'll be given a checklist. Law enforcement officer's checklist, if I can. Basically, it's a very simple checklist asking for the name of the complainant. Do they own? Do they rent? The name of the association? You know, name of the board members? Do they have a professional manager? And then it goes into asking some questions. If you filed a complaint with the state, and then it goes into asking, have you spoken to your ombudsman's office, which we have here? And here are the key components of the checklist. Then it asks you for the names of the persons that are guilty of any alleged financial or any type of wrongdoings. Then they ask you for evidence. They ask you if you've got videos, if you've got any kind of documents. Then they also ask you to, of course, exercise your right to ask for public records, because that'll make it easier to investigate. There's a lot of information that people can bring forward. Do you have any evidence of any wrongdoing, meaning checks or contracts or invoices or maybe statements from vendors? Are there any witnesses willing to speak out on behalf of the wrongdoing? Have there been any audits that can attest to any wrongdoing? You see where we're going with this checklist.
Yeah.
The officers then are given as much as they can, and if they don't have it at that time, what they do with this form is then they go ahead, and when they compile this information that they'll need, they can send this to our point person, which is, in this case, is our ombudsman's office. They will screen it, because a lot of times they're not really of criminal nature. They could be something where it's just a violation that the board didn't do something correctly. But now the ombudsman, having years of experience, can see something that catches the eye and says, yes, this definitely deserves more looking into. Then those local police officers will start an extensive investigation. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement has the right to do and the powers to do what they call forensic audits of their books,
right.
So they can do that. And if all of that pans out in an investigation, the last step is the state attorney. They would turn over the case. By the way, this is the same way they investigate any types of cases, whether they're homicide, whether it's robbery, whether it's rape. It's the same thing that these detectives investigate, except now they know what to look for in condo type of crimes. If they find any probable cause, the last step is the state attorney would take it, and they will file charges against either board members or a property management company, be it an attorney, be it a contractor, anybody that has broken the laws and created some type of misdemeanor or felony in the state of Florida. And that is the leg of enforcement. I tried to explain it as quickly as I can and as in layman's terms as possible so you understand. So we are basically walking, hand-walking our police officers through this. They're until they all become very familiar with these type of crimes, with this type of vandalism, and they're letting the people know, you now can help us make an arrest if there's something that is really going on that is a crime here in the state of Florida. And finally, all the groups are working together. Our county is so excited that our Economic Crimes Bureau from the county itself has taken this on as one of their little pet peeve projects, where they're developing even different ideas. They want to get information into every police officer's little booklet so they can always refer to a page if they show up at a condominium. Nowadays, a lot of police officers have computers in their cars. They want to put an icon in there so that they can click on it, and they'll have a step-by-step on how to go forward helping citizens with an investigation of a crime, and so on and so on. So now you have an idea of what this pilot program is all about. And as I said earlier, I got to tell you that I think the first arrest will take place next week on some cases that were being worked even prior to this pilot program really kicking off with some very committed detectives that now understand what they need to look for. And this is where we're going to bring some sanity to this issue. I'll end by saying that, you know, we can pass a lot of laws. We can pass all the laws in the world. But without good enforcement, no law is any good.
I agree. You've got to have
that leg. So if other states would start modeling something like this and let their local law enforcement people know and their state attorney that there is a lot of crimes being committed in these associations and that they need to go ahead and pursue them the same way we pursue the theft of an automobile or a break-in into a home or anything of that nature, these are just as bad. And, of course, if it's not of criminal nature, then the regulatory arms can fine the boards or send notices of warning or wherever it may be that that is needed in that type of situation. But the enforcement part is a must, and that is what we are working on here in Miami-Dade County as a pilot program, and hopefully before the year's out, we'll have it implemented in the entire state of Florida.
We're talking to State Representative Julio Rabino from sunny Florida. Julio, you told me about this program, I believe, about 2 years ago. You had the idea you were going to work it, but you couldn't get it passed.
We couldn't. Here's what happened. Remember I said that I tried to do this by passing legislation, and the reason we tried by a legislative approach was because if we passed it in the form of legislation, then these groups that may have been hesitant to become part of the partnership had no choice but to join in because it was going to be law. Plus, it would have added money to it. It would have created some funding for additional positions. Well, I mean, it got to the point where at one time we had the funding in and the governor vetoed the funding in the state of Florida. And in other cases, I've always said, and this is a personal feeling, we had law firms that fought against this legislation when I tried to do it legislatively because they claim it wasn't necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I said to that? My argument was, well, of course the law firms don't want this stuff to pass, and they don't want people to take control and law enforcement to start arresting, because as long as there's turmoil in these associations, what happens? The law firms are kicked into action,
right.
Phone calls are placed, and they're billing $200 plus an hour to give advice on a phone or push paper. But that will never bring to justice people that are doing wrong in these associations. So that's what I think was really behind I speak my mind, as you can tell, what I thought was behind trying to kill it legislatively. So when they couldn't beat us legislatively, that's when I decided to go reaching out, personally meeting with, like I said, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement and many visits to the state attorney's office and personally to the ombudsman's office and all the groups and said, look, I'm still moving forward with this. 2 years later, I guess I tired them out, and they finally gave in. And they said, we're doing it. All right, Representative, leave us alone. We will do it. We'll work with you. And all kidding aside, everybody's been very cooperative. Nobody has really been hesitant. They've all been willing to do this. It's just that what we constantly hear is we're short-staffed. We really don't have the bodies. Well, that's my other job, is to get them funding for additional bodies to take these programs to the next level.
So the last time I talked to you, you hadn't quite started it yet. You were still in the training process and still in the design process. When did the program actually get started?
We kicked it into gear in March. And I will tell you that what we meant by kicking into gear was that the forms were ready, the police departments had already been trained, and I take it back. I think we had some additional groups that probably were sometime in April or May that had finally received the materials. And let me tell you, my work is not done. Every day I'll get a call from a citizen that may have called their police department, and that police department may have said, I don't know personally about it. And what I do is I get on the horn, I call these police departments, and I say, listen, this program is up and running. Please make sure that everyone understands about this program. If they haven't been trained, train them. You've got the material. You've got the forms. Every police department's got the forms. And that is why it's called a pilot program. We're getting all the bugs out of it, because the goal is that a couple of months from now, There shouldn't be a single phone call that goes to any police department in Dade County where everyone doesn't know, oh, you're calling about the pilot program? Yes, ma'am. Do you need an officer to come out? We'll send him out. Or if you'd like to come to the station, the condo crime checklist is here. Come pick it up, and you'll start knowing exactly what you need in order for law enforcement to start investigating. And that is my job. I've made this my, it's almost like if I had a stepchild on this one, that I'm working it every single day, Saturday, Sunday, meeting with everybody. But you got to understand, you've got to devote some time and attention to make this work. Because this will work, and I know, again, that Florida is going to be an example of creating a program to really combat fraud in association living. And as I said earlier, we started with condo, but once we have this perfected, this will quickly and readily apply to homeowner associations, because the investigators already, these detectives are already understanding that in many cases it's just the same type of issues that go on. So I think that once we get it perfected in one, we'll quickly transition it into the homeowner association.
You're anticipating getting the first set of arrests. I mean, the program, you said, has been up since
March,
April, May. Mm-hmm. And you're getting the first arrests next week?
Next week we will probably hold a press conference. Again, this is still very private information. That's why we really can't give names or anything of that nature. But the word is by next Wednesday we'll be having a press conference on the first group of, and these seem to be board members that have been found in a situation where they have been stealing money, using it for their personal expenses and gains and so forth, of people's maintenance fees that go into the budget.
Right.
This is so vulnerable. It
yes,
is so
it is.
Vulnerable. It's sad.
It is.
It's sad. Really sad.
It is. It really is. And I've pulled up. Well, I did a show on condo or association fraud, whether it was condo or single family homes, it didn't matter. But I pulled up in like a 3-week period, something like 7 or 9 different stories from around the country. There's another one the other day, and I believe it was from New Jersey, $200,000 that was stolen from a condominium. I was talking to someone, apparently last year there was several million dollars in New York. There's currently a case up in Ohio with UVest, $3.4 million. I mean, there's a lot of money out
there. Well, sure, and the reason they get away with that is because legislators, and I put it on us, it's our responsibility to create these programs to combat fraud. That is fraud. In any aspect of the word, it's fraud. It's stealing. And the worst part about it, these are people that you entrusted to handle all of the responsibilities of where you live. And they're stealing money. And you know why they do it? Because they also, a lot of these people, it's a racket. They know it. I mean, it's funny when you can see that somebody was a board member in some other state, and all of a sudden they came down here and they're doing the same thing that they did in another state. And they've known that they've, for years, that there just wasn't any laws or anything in place to go after them if they decided to commit this type of fraud. And it's my job to make sure that we put an end to that. I would love to leave the legislature and be known as the guy who created what Medicare fraud is, the division for condo in this type of situation. I'd like everybody to say Representative Rubino was the one that established the condo and homeowner fraud program for the entire state of Florida. And, you know, we tackle a lot of issues, but that would give me a lot of satisfaction knowing that I helped and put in my seed to help to protect people in their associations and where they live. It's a terrible abuse, and there's probably hundreds of millions of dollars being taken every year, but no one there from law enforcement to go after these, as they need to be called, delinquents that are pulling these kind of stunts.
Well, I think that I think the last time I saw the numbers, I think associations generate something like $40 billion a year.
That is correct. Those are the numbers. And to believe with those kind of numbers that we don't have a check and balance in place, that's
right.
Pretty sad.
It is pretty sad. You're absolutely right. It's very sad, and it's needed. What's the difference between why is it that it's taken this long? Because condominiums have been around since the 60s. Homeowner associations have been predominantly around since the 70s, late 60s, early 70s. Why has it taken 35, 40 years, basically,
Well, first of all,
recognize that crime is crime. I mean, you steal a pack of gum from 7-Eleven, the police will be all over you.
You got it.
And then hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars from an association.
That's a perfect analogy. Why something like that is basically investigated and people are arrested, and why not something like this? The answer to that is that I think that nowadays, more than ever, well, my biggest reason why you never had it addressed is because there's always been a lot of special interests. Remember all the people that feed off an association. You've got law firms, you've got independent vendors, you've got property managers, you've got property management companies, CAMs. A lot of people can make a living off your money that you pay in maintenance fees as far as the budget. But the other thing is that I don't think there were grassroots groups that were established. And thanks to, again, people like Jan and CCFJ, and I always leave a lot of people out, but I think through Jan, I've met what I call the core, the grassroots people that go after this nonsense. And now that people are starting to understand that there are some legislators taking this cause up, and that they need to make some noise, because if you don't make some noise and you don't get involved, then you're going to always be a victim. And people are starting to stand up on their own and saying, we're going to stop this nonsense. And people are educating themselves on what their rights are when you live in an association environment. All of these things, I think, are leading to now something finally being done. But more than ever, it's the large budgets. Because back then, condominiums maintenance or budget with maybe $10,000-$20,000 was the average. Nowadays, with millions. These multi-million dollar monster condominiums that they build, you understand that those budgets can be in the millions.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're out of time, and I've got the next guys are here, and they're ready to take over my seat. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
And I look forward to having you back on real soon, and we can continue this and find out what happened.
It would be my pleasure to give you updates. And thank you again, Shu, for everything you do.
Thanks for joining us on The Commons today. On The Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. See you all next week.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
why a dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
An audio poo-poo platter, a radio smorgasbord. We're WEBR, Fairfax's...